This Moment of Science comes from Indiana University. Today's program was prepared by Eric Sonstrom, with help from Tony Mesher in the Medical Sciences Program. I'm Yael Cassander.
In sports, the Cleveland Cavaliers and Boston Celtics are set to square off again tonight in Cleveland for Game 4 of their best-of-seven series. The Celtics won the first two games in Boston, while the Cavs grabbed Game 3 two nights ago in Cleveland's Quicken Loans Arena. The lone Stanley Cup game tonight is being played in Dallas as the Stars entertain Detroit. This will be Game 3 of the Western Conference Final, with Detroit on top 2-0. Prosecutors in Miami say they will not seek the death penalty against four people charged with murder in the death of Washington Redskins defensive back Sean Taylor. In a letter to the suspect's attorneys, Miami-Dade County Prosecutor Reed Rubin said the four suspects would face maximum sentences of life in prison if convicted. Mother Nature has forced a rarity in baseball this afternoon. A pair of doubleheaders will be played, one in each league. Pittsburgh hosts Atlanta 4-2, and Toronto will play a pair in Cleveland. The extra games are makeup games from yesterday's rain. One of these contests is now complete. The final, Pittsburgh-Atlanta, in that first game, the Pittsburgh Pirates shut out the Braves 5-0. The White Sox have won 9 of their last 12 games against the Angels in Anaheim, heading into tonight's opener of a 4-game set there. The St. Louis Cardinals will be hoping for a split in their 4-game series with the Milwaukee Brewers in tonight's finale at Miller Park. The St. Louis Cardinals have lost 4 of 5 after winning 8 of their previous 10, and that means that they've fallen just slightly behind the Cubs for the NL Central lead. The Cubs are currently 22-15, while the Cards are 23-16. And the Cubs, they open a 4-game series tonight with the San Diego Padres at Wrigley Field. That's sports.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Jupiter's Pizzeria and Billiards, with 2 Champaign locations, in downtown for lunch, dinner, or an evening spot with friends, or their larger location at Duncan and Windsor with family-friendly games and interactive entertainment.
Chicago Tribune Company chief Sam Zell says the whole newspaper industry needs a new business model. He bought the ailing Tribune conglomerate in an $8 billion deal late last year. He says papers have to be nimble, use multiple media platforms, and most importantly, draw a larger, younger audience. Diantha Parker reports.
Back in February, Sam Zell told Tribune staff, "Unfortunately, I can't turn this ship from its course of the past 10 years within just a few months." But he swiftly cut hundreds of jobs at the Chicago Tribune, Los Angeles Times, and other company papers. He's brought in new top management from the internet and entertainment industries and called for a less uptight corporate culture. Zell made his case again last month on a conference call.
"This company needs a new template, and we need to think differently. We have to be revenue-focused, we have to be more creative, we have to be faster and leaner."
Zell wants different departments to communicate more and work together to capture both audience and advertisers. He said he asked staff for suggestions and received more than 3,000 emails.
"These people really want this to work. If you sat over my on my shoulder over the last 3 months reading these emails late into the night, I might add, you come away and you say, these people care. These people have a vested interest in making this company work."
Zell says he's gotten all kinds of ideas.
"I think they must be wonderful. Some of them must be insane. Like, I believe the Tribune should buy Wendella boats, and that would help us, and we could give free Tribunes to people. Or I believe that John Cash should have his own morning kid show. It could be wild."
Rick Kogan writes for the Chicago Tribune's Sunday magazine and hosts a radio show, so he gets the need for media multitasking. But as a second-generation newspaper man, he finds the industry's downturn and his own paper's upheaval deeply depressing. The same might be said of the dim room in the Tribune Tower where we're talking. It looks like the place where people stick the less comfortable chairs. Everything that's not gray seems to be brown. But Kogan says it used to be pink back when it was his late friend Ann Lander's office. Those were rosier times, and he acknowledges the paper is trying to square its present reality with its own sense of the way things used to be.
"There is a kind of institutional, and always has been here, complacency that we are the Tribune. And that in some ways, that's sort of nonsensical, because if Zell and his people, these sort of free thinkers that he's brought on board, they are, to my mind, in the tradition of Colonel McCormick, who ran this place and who was one of the great lovers of new technologies.
Colonel Robert R. McCormick oversaw the Tribune for the first half of the last century. He was a rich, outspoken guy who liked grand gestures, buying the Tribune's first radio station and naming it WGN after the company motto, World's Greatest Newspaper. But McCormick's audience was not abandoning print in favor of the Internet. Readers who actually pick up a newspaper are a graying population, and advertisers are following younger customers online, where space is ruinously cheap, maybe 10 to 15 cents for every dollar a print ad would cost. Morningstar media analyst Tom Corbett leafs through a Chicago Tribune and finds a full-page cell phone ad on the back of the front section. He says this is where the money is.
You know, people pull out the section and then they leave it, say, you know, on the bus, or they leave it in a cab, or they leave it in the doctor's office. This ad will probably be seen and noticed by a greater proportion of readers than, say, the eighth page ad, you know, buried in section C, advertising, say, hot tubs.
But print ads are declining, too. Websites like Craigslist, along with the slump in the housing market, have taken a giant bite out of the classified section, until now a reliable moneymaker. Corbett says papers are also weighed down by infrastructure, like printing plants and delivery trucks and support staff. He agrees the industry needs to rethink the model, but he says papers that lay off lots of reporters and editors can damage both their product and their reputation. Readers go away, and so do advertisers. Former Chicago Tribune editor Marshall Froker is tired of this conversation.
What kind of annoys me from analysts and consultants and so on is that they kept saying newspapers have to reinvent themselves. They don't get it. This is a new era. And, you know, what I want to scream at them is, you know, we do get it. We have gotten it. We have been trying to change the way we do things for decades.
Froker took what he calls a generous buyout this year, one of many staffers who did so. He gives Sam Zell a lot of credit for taking the company on. But Froker thinks a newspaper like the Tribune can't fundamentally change its tone and content and still be the Tribune. He says if Zell wants to strengthen the Chicago Tribune brand, he's got to figure out how to free it from the package it came in. As Zell put it, a ship that's hard to turn. I'm Diantha Parker.
More and more gay couples are adopting children. The Urban Institute estimates that 65,000 adopted children are already living in a household with same-sex parents. Brendan Bowersox and Kevin Johnson make up one of those households. Over a year ago, they adopted a baby boy. Kevin and Brendan say they enjoy being parents, but being gay can make parenthood problematic and frustrating. AM 580's Terrell Starr talked with Brendan and Kevin about those joys and dilemmas in the first part of a two-part series on gay adoptions.
Brendan Bowersox and Kevin Johnson say they, along with their 9-month-old son Garrett, are a typical American family. They acknowledge that many people may not see same-sex parents as typical, but that didn't stop them from bringing a new addition into their household. It was Kevin, who works as a coordinator in the Global Campus Initiative at the University of Illinois, who brought up the possibility of being parents 2 years ago. At first, Brandon, a technology company co-owner and alderman on the Urbana City Council, says he wasn't sure about the idea. But Kevin says he made up his mind about being a father a long time ago.
I always wanted kids. I went through a very short period at a very young age, very early, like, you know, 12, 13, 14, where I thought that I would not be able to be a father because of my own immaturity in regards to understanding the gay culture.
They know society views gay parents differently than heterosexual parents. Neither feels it should be an issue, but they know it is. It was one of the concerns they addressed with their adoption agent, Amanda Black. Black has been an adoption agent at ABC Counseling in Normal for 4 years and says her agency is one of the few in the area that works with gay couples. She says many gay couples lack support from their immediate and extended families.
It definitely has been a challenge for some other couples when their family is not supportive. We specifically assess other supports that they may have, you know, if they're not involved with their extended family.
Brandon says this has not been an issue for him and Kevin. Ever since they completed the adoption process and brought Garrett home, Brandon says his parents and Kevin's mom have been very supportive. He says they began watching Garrett when the two transitioned back to their jobs after 2 months of parental leave. Though Kevin and Brandon have family support, there were issues that their adoption agent needed to discuss with them. One was how they planned on raising a child in a gay household. Kevin says he thinks about it often.
Garrett is not gay, but he is coming into a gay household. And so we have to be able to determine how we're going to incorporate him into our lives, into the gay community.
Another basic question Brandon and Kevin had to ask themselves is, who's the daddy?
We both felt that we had both earned the name of daddy when, you know, in this situation, and we both wanted to be dads. So that's what we decided, that he would just call us both dads.
But Kevin knows there are even tougher issues that they will have to deal with as Garrett grows older. What if Garrett comes home from school and asks, how come other children have a mother and I don't? Or, why are my friends teasing me because I have two fathers? Brandon says he thinks about those moments, but says there's time to prepare for that eventuality.
I mean, yeah, definitely. You think through what you're going to say. I mean, I guess right now there's not a lot to say because he's a baby.
Brandon and Kevin say Garrett should know his birth mother, and she should be an important part of his life. The two met her while she was 3 months pregnant with Garrett.
His mother is a huge part of our life. I mean, so we talk to her every week. She's visited several times. So he'll be able to say he also has a mom, but, you know, and he'll have to explain that. And he'll have to, on his own terms, decide how he feels about that.
But Garrett is too young for Kevin and Brandon to consider such questions. For now, they are more concerned about which daycare they can place Garrett in, and if it's gay-friendly. Kevin and Brandon say they know being parents doesn't fit some people's vision of a family. But for now, they're just focused on being parents.
Just like any two parents, he'll end up, you know, coming to one of us when he wants to do woodworking projects and going to another of us when he wants to learn how to cook or something. Actually, we're both kind of bad at cooking and woodworking, so I don't know which one of us he'll go to in those cases. But, you know, each of us is a little different and bring different things to the relationship and to the family, just like any couple.
As optimistic as Brandon and Kevin are about their future as parents, many legal potholes lie ahead. Brandon and Kevin say they are happy in Illinois and have no plans of moving elsewhere. This may be a good thing, because the laws that support them in Illinois may not be applicable in other states. Tomorrow, Brandon and Kevin will share the legal challenges they face as gay parents. And gay family attorney Jill Gatz will discuss how the law can potentially treat parents like Kevin and Brandon in certain situations. I'm Terrell Starr, AM 580 News.
It's the stuff of fiction. A young mother leaves her newborn baby in the hands of firefighters at a local firehouse. But this story is not only real, the act at its heart is absolutely legal. Commentator Amy Guida explains the particulars of the Abandoned Newborn Infant Protection Act in this week's edition of Legal Issues in the News.
Just 1 week before Mother's Day this year, a teenager handed her newborn baby boy, not more than a few hours old, to workers at a fire station in Chicago. The young mother then promptly left. But firefighters didn't track her down or call police with her description. Instead, they notified a local hospital. That's because relinquishing a newborn in that fashion is perfectly legal in Illinois. A baby who's no more than 7 days old can be left at a fire station, a police station, a hospital, or an emergency care facility in Illinois, and the parent needn't worry about criminal penalties as long as the baby wasn't abused. That's because of a law known as the Illinois Abandoned Infant Protection Act. A public relations campaign promotes it as a no-shame, no-blame, no-names way of handing over an infant. And that's precisely the idea behind the law. Once a baby is left in the hands of firefighters or police or medical workers, like the baby left at the Chicago fire station in early May, things promptly swing into action. First, as long as the baby hasn't been abused or neglected, the substitute caregivers can't try to track down the parent. She or he can maintain anonymity under the statute, and the law makes clear that anyone leaving a child in such a way can't be accused of child neglect or child endangerment or investigated in any way. Moreover, no one's supposed to publicly disclose any information regarding the individuals involved. Second, the substitute caregivers must make arrangements to have the child cared for medically. There's also a check to be sure that the baby isn't a missing child. And third, once the newborn is deemed healthy, the state must begin to make suitable custody arrangements. Under the statute, there's a presumption that handing over an infant means that the parent consents to have parental rights terminated. That presumption can be overcome, but within certain limitations. And there's also a search of the putative father registry in an attempt to contact the father before any adoption. Safe haven laws have their critics. Some argue that the laws run roughshod over the rights of fathers who might be willing to take responsibility. Others contend that the laws have relatively little practical impact and carry an ulterior pro-life symbolism. But there's some indication that the Illinois Act is working. The Chicago Save Abandoned Babies Foundation reports that 43 infants have been left in the hands of firefighters or police or medical personnel since the act became law in 2001. Apparently not all new parents have gotten or heeded the message, though. Nearly 50 babies were left in unsafe places over the same time period, and about half of those babies died. Yet there's reason to hope that those numbers may be shrinking. A new part of the statute, passed late last summer, mandates that police and fire stations, hospitals, and emergency medical providers post signs in conspicuous places on the outside of their buildings explaining the program. Save Abandoned Babies likes to think that's why nobody's abandoned a baby illegally in Illinois since August 2007. So a young Chicago mother celebrated Mother's Day this year without her newborn. But for those who've supported the Illinois Abandoned Infant Protection Act since its inception in 2001, that's reason to celebrate. I'm Amy Guida.
Amy Guida is an assistant professor of journalism and law at the University of Illinois.
Earth and Sky.
The ability to monitor inside the body in real time using nanotechnology sensors, nanotechnology to change processes of producing food items, I think opens up a whole new territory.
You're listening to John Hockenberry, host of a new Fred Friendly seminar series called Nanotechnology, the Power of Small, airing on public television in 2008. We asked his opinion on what people should know about nanotechnology.
Well, I think probably the most important thing they should know is that it's coming. In some places, it's already here, where the science is so far out ahead of the public's understanding that the potential for creating more problems than are solved or manipulating things too quickly becomes a very, very difficult temptation to resist.
But Hockenberry is hopeful that people won't fear the technology, that their take on it might change as they investigate, listen, and learn more.
I think knowledge is really power here.
In 2007, over $60 billion of nano products were sold, with $3 trillion estimated by 2014. Hockenberry's new show is called The Takeaway from WNYC in New York. Watch Nanotechnology, the Power of Small on public television in 2008 or visit powerofsmall.org. We're Earth and Sky, a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Support for today's broadcast comes from the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute at the University of Illinois, hosting a lifelong learning program developed specifically for adults over 50. Additional information on programs available by email at olli@uiuc.edu.
It's 2 minutes before 3 o'clock. This is WILL Urbana, the broadcasting service of the College of Media at Illinois. Mike Solo's forecast for Illinois and Indiana this afternoon, partly to mostly cloudy in far northern and eastern Indiana. Otherwise, mostly sunny, highs ranging from 55 near Lake Michigan in northwestern Indiana to 72 in far southern Illinois. Tonight, mainly clear, lows ranging from near 40 in northeastern Indiana to 52 in western Illinois. Tomorrow, sunny early, then clouds increasing from west to east during the afternoon, highs in the low to middle 70s. This afternoon in Champaign-Urbana, sunny and warmer, the high 65, the wind from the north at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, clear, the low 48, the wind from the east at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, breezy, and warmer, the high around 75, the wind from the south at 15 to 30 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, cloudy and mild, with showers and thunderstorms arriving, the low 58. The outlook for Wednesday, cloudy and breezy, with occasional showers and thunderstorms, the high 72. At 1 minute before 3 o'clock, 62 degrees in Urbana. Up next, it's The World from PRI. Stay tuned.